First, the college admission test, known as the SAT, will implement a measurement of adversity when compiling scores for students who take the exam. For years, the test itself has been criticized for skewing in favor of higher-income students who typically have greater access to tutors or prep materials, while middle- to lower-income students are left behind. The new metrics will include where the student lives and the quality of the high school they attend. Our next guest has been covering the change and is here to talk about the role of college admission tests in today's higher education world. Scott Jasek is an editor for Inside Higher Ed. Scott, welcome back to Central Time.
Great to be here.
Well, tell us what this change is and how it would work. I've seen a lot of, misinformation about what this is.
Yes. So it would be an additional score that will appear reported to the college for every student who takes the SAT. So they would get whatever their score is on the actual test, and then an adversity score on a scale of up to 100. The student won't know his or her adversity score, but the college will, in theory, so they have more context to evaluate, you know, a student who went to a low-income high school in a dangerous neighborhood versus a student who went to high school in a wealthy suburb.
And one thing that I've seen that seems to get it wrong, this will not say, okay, we're going to take that adversity score and then change your SAT score. The SAT score stays the same.
No, the SAT score, you're right. The SAT score stays exactly the same, and it's up to the college to decide whether they're going to use this at all. There's no requirement that they do so. In fact, many colleges today would say that they already factor in such things, although without a score, because they're aware that there are very different opportunities available based on socioeconomics. Across all income levels, the wealthier you are, on average, the better you will do on the SAT.
What goes into this measurement of adversity? What factors does the College Board plan to use here?
So they are mostly about the high school and the neighborhood. Does the high school send on a lot of students to college? Does the high school offer a lot of AP courses, AP also run by the College Board? What is the crime situation in the neighborhood? Are families stable in the neighborhood? Is there a lot of moving around? Are people homeless? But what's important is this is all information about either the high school or the neighborhood. It's not about the specific student. So while most high schools do serve in our society, either wealthy or non-wealthy, if you were the poor kid in a wealthy high school, you might not get a high adversity score. And if you were the wealthy kid in a poor high school, you might get a high adversity score.
Talking to Scott Jasek from Inside Higher Ed, looking at a change that the College Board is bringing to the SAT, including, in effect, an adversity index that will go along with test scores for students if colleges want to look at them. Scott, what do we know about why the College Board wants to make this change, and presumably why colleges and universities would want them to?
So the College Board, one, they're losing. Some colleges are dropping the SAT and the ACT as a requirement. Many colleges are worried about this issue of whether it unfairly privileges wealthier applicants. And while the adversity index will not consider race or ethnicity, the reality is a disproportionate number of low-income students in America are Black and Latino. So there is concern that if the Supreme Court bars colleges from considering race and ethnicity in admissions, which could happen in a few years, that it would be they might not want to use the SAT if they feared that would give them entering classes without very many Black and Latino students.
Have colleges or universities said how they want to use this so far?
Not yet, but the reality is lots of colleges say they're already doing this. You know, these days, any college admissions officer has a computer in which they can quickly compare a student based on high school or neighborhood or background. So it's not actually a new concept. The College Board is putting this together in a sort of neat way, I guess. But I would be hard-pressed to find colleges with competitive admissions that don't say they do a form of this already.
Now, when I took the SAT, and it's been a few days, I'm not going to lie, but I feel like the idea was This is an objective measure of your college readiness, regardless of who you are and where you come from. Does anybody believe that anymore?
Well, I mean, in theory, the College Board does. But here's the reality is there are a lot of very talented Black and Latino students who go to lousy high schools. The reality is you do better on the SAT if you take a rigorous college preparatory curriculum. College Board will tell you that. ACT will tell you that. Well, who's more likely to do that? Students who go to suburban high schools or private high schools. Who's more likely to do that? The wealthy. Our society just has, you mentioned the advantage of tutors, but I would say it's the advantage of high schools is where I would start. That some high schools offer much more rigorous training in the courses that would help somebody do well on the SAT. It is not equal in American society.
And we're hearing about these changes now, but I understand the College Board has been testing these for a while now. Is that right?
Yes, for several years they've been testing it. They have been doing it with 50 colleges. They're going to go up to 150 next year before offering it to all colleges.
And this news about this broke recently after all the big college admissions scandals that came out of well-to-do families kind of buying their way, in effect, into colleges. Those aren't necessarily connected, though, are they?
They're not directly connected. This is a project that the College Board was at work on well before. But the scandal, while the scandal only affects a small number of students, the scandal has drawn attention to the many advantages that the wealthy have. The scandal is about actions that are elite, that if they happened, and many of them clearly have, were illegal. It's not illegal if you have the means to do so to send your kid to a wealthy private school. It's not illegal to hire a tutor. It's not illegal to have your kid take the SAT 8 times. There are lots of advantages of the wealthy, and I think the scandal has just put those advantages front of mind to many more people, even if directly that's not what this is about.
What kind of reactions have you been hearing so far, Scott, in the higher education world, the sort of people who presumably are the target audience for these changes?
So some are happy. Many admissions officials just say, you know, I welcome any and all contacts. But many advocates for low-income students and minority students are being quite critical. They note that that it doesn't include race and say that race matters. There's also a lot of attention on the fact that students won't know what their adversity score is. And there are also many who say that families will find ways to game the system. And I guess what we have seen in the scandal is that families will do whatever it takes, or some will do whatever it takes, even breaking the law, to give their kid a leg up.
And you wrote in your piece about this that there's been reaction from opponents of affirmative action who are worried that this could be, in effect, a backdoor to some sort of race-based preferences. What's the argument there?
Right. Well, they say that colleges will see, oh, high adversity index. Okay, we'll let that student in with low SAT scores and low grades. Now, the reality is because the adversity index isn't directly about race, that isn't 100% true, but many of those who would get a high adversity score are Black and Latino. So they're saying it's a backdoor way to do that. Then there are a lot of fans of affirmative action who believe it's necessary, who want to know why it's wrong to say, hey, we want to consider race.
We're talking to Scott Jasek right now, editor for Inside Higher Ed. He's been covering the College Board's new changes to the SAT, including this measurement of adversity based on the zip code and high school of the student, in large part. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about the new changes to the SAT being rolled out, some schools at a time, and the idea of measuring the adversity a student might have encountered that might give some context to that number they come out of the test with? What role do you think standardized tests should play in college admissions? Do you think there should be changes in general to how people get selected at institutions of higher education in general? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Farad. Right now, we continue our conversation about the latest changes to the college admissions exam, the SAT. The company that administers that test has included a new, or will include a new, adversity index, which takes into account where the test taker lives and the quality of their high school. Our guest is Scott Jasek, editor for Inside Higher Ed, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of this idea? Do you think it could be helpful to give a fuller picture for college admissions on what a student went through to get that 1,000 or 1,200 or whatever kind of numbers they're getting on the SAT? Should tests like the SAT, the ACT play a big role in who gets into college? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll go to your calls now. Zach is with us in Green Bay. Zach, hi.
Hi, how you doing, Rob?
Good. What did you want to ask about, Zach?
I have two sisters that are currently in high school, and this is all the time for the SAT prep and ACTs. But they're both homeschooled right now, and they've moved around a lot. Will this affect them at all, or how are the homeschool scores calculated?
Interesting, Zach. Thanks for bringing that up. Do we know, Scott, how we would measure high school adversity for a homeschooler?
I don't think they could do the high school part of it. They could do the, again, part of it is on the neighborhood. So part of it they could. Generally, I would say test scores tend to be more important for homeschoolers than others. So I would definitely encourage your sisters to work hard on it, because some colleges don't have full trust in homeschool grades, and that may or may not be fair, but that's just a reality. They tend to be more likely to pay attention to test scores with homeschooled applicants than others.
Zach, thanks a lot for bringing that up. We'll go to Allison now in Waukesha. Allison, hello.
Hi. I just had two thoughts about this whole thing. The first one was, are applicants, would they have the ability to opt out of having that information, you know, put with their scores? You know, maybe they don't want anybody to know what their high school situation was, or, you know, where they lived or whatever. And then my second thought was, is there any possibility that that could adversely affect their chances of getting into a college? You know, say, you know, admissions people look at somebody coming from a low income area and decide that they don't want that type of clientele on their campus.
Interesting. So could it be used to discriminate against people from those poor schools, Scott?
Well, I guess it could be. I mean, you have to assume, if you believe in this, good intent on the part of admissions officers. But I would note right now, you can't apply to most colleges without saying the high school you went to. And if it's a public high school, you are also probably identifying your neighborhood. In general, having gone to a poor, low-income high school helps a student, because it does explain why, you know, the student in the wealthy suburban high school who has 10 AP courses and went to Baja, California to do environmental work in the summer, well, that student had a lot of advantages that maybe another did not. So in general, I think it is helpful to students for colleges to know what their actual conditions were.
Thanks for the call, Allison. So yeah, that's the core of the idea, Scott. If you, Scott, and I, Rob, have the same scores, but I went to a high school with more advantages, maybe had more access to AP classes and things like that, that same score might have a different meaning then to the college. It meant you worked harder, were sharper to begin with.
Right. And again, think of like the AP courses as an example. There are high schools with tons of options, with tons of foreign languages, with tons of lab sciences. And then there are other high schools that don't have very many. So the reality is the same, say, math SAT score or a biology AP score does not mean the same thing.
I want to go to our commenters on Facebook now. Libby wrote, get rid of the testing industry. The hardship comes in part because so much expense is involved in prep courses and tutoring and the luxury of taking the test repeatedly. Wealthy kids in better schools have so many advantages for which no adversity index can compensate. Testing keeps poor kids down. Is that argument out there that Libby is making, Scott?
That argument is definitely out there, and that may be part of why the College Board did this. The University of Chicago, for instance, this year went test optional. Now, the reality is, when you talk about the spending on test prep, that is not equal across all groups. If you're a real poor kid, you might be fortunate enough to find some free test prep. But when you talk about the amount of money being spent on test prep, and it is obscene at some levels, it is primarily the wealthier students.
We're talking to Scott Jasek, editor for Inside Higher Ed, looking at college admissions, this new change from the SAT saying they're going to include what's being called an adversity index, looking at a neighborhood and a school a student is from and comparing it to the advantages or disadvantages from one place to another, giving colleges that background behind the number. You can still join in with your thoughts at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Scott, I've seen the argument that if you get rid of tests, then that makes grades more important. So that's where the pressure goes to. The pressure is going to be somewhere.
Right. And it is also true that an A in one high school is not the same as an A in another high school. And grade inflation is real. A lot of the research shows, though, that grade inflation is the worst at colleges with wealthier students who clearly have expectations that they will earn A's. So there are ways, you know, a high school transcript can tell you what percentage of students got A's, what percentage went on to college, and has information about the courses and their rigor. So a good college admissions officer isn't just looking at the GPA, but is looking at the GPA and what it actually represents.
Yeah, what all is in a toolkit usually for the college admissions officer? Obviously, we've got the test scores, if it's a school that uses that, the grades, some information about the high school, admissions essays, things like that. Do those really play a role?
So the top factor, according to all surveys, is grades in college preparatory courses, followed by and adding in tests. Then you have essays, you have extracurricular activities, you have teacher recommendations. All of those are important, but play less of a role typically than grades in college preparatory courses and test scores. And then you have lots of other advantages. So, for instance, a lot of colleges want athletes. And so the reality is the star football player may get in over somebody with better grades and test scores who is not a star football player. So the idea that it's a pure formula, which a lot of people seem to still believe, is not true.
Let's bring on another caller now. Mike is with us in Paoli. Mike, hi. Mike, are you there?
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah,
sorry, we had trouble bringing you up. Mike, hi.
Hi. My question is, you know, why don't we just do away with the test preparation industry? I mean, it seems that the idea of having the test questions or the test formats really well known allows for kids and families that have the resources so that they can invest in all this stuff and these test preparation courses. And I'd love to hear what does obscene mean to your guest? In comparison to somebody who not only are they going to a school maybe that doesn't have any of that, but on top of that, you know, they got to work a job because that, you know, when they're a junior or senior in high school, their family needs that income.
Mike, thanks for the call. Scott, could we get rid of the test prep industry?
So I think it would be very hard to ban it. I mean, these are private businesses that aren't part of schools. And just as, say, a wealthy individual probably can get tax help that you and I couldn't, that's legal. So I don't see a legal means to make it illegal to offer these services. That's sort of free enterprise.
Thanks for the call. We'll go to Richard now in Lakewood. Richard, hi.
Hi. Hey, my question is this. If you're a high school grad who goes into the service, comes out as a vet and applies to college, how does this system affect your applying and getting in?
Interesting, Richard. Thanks for bringing that up. And that could apply to veterans or other so-called non-traditional students. Scott, are they in a different circle here?
Right. So this is assuming that students are going straight from high school to college. There's a whole bunch of separate issues for veterans, who are a very important group going into higher ed. Generally, veterans are great students and have learned a lot in military service. And the military is a great institution at teaching people how to learn because people are constantly trained for new duties. So I don't see this helping them as much. But a lot of colleges are stepping up their recruitment of veterans because they are outstanding students.
Thanks a lot for the call, Richard. That brings up a point. Are we trying to do our admission systems to bring in different groups of people to serve the nation, or are we trying to figure out who's going to be successful in college based on what they've already done? That's two different approaches, it seems like.
Well, I'm not sure it's an either or. I mean, I think both come into play. But many people would say if we look at our society, if only kids from wealthy families get ahead and go to college, our society will not be well served. They are not the majority of the population, and every community needs its talent nurtured. In a state like Wisconsin, that doesn't just mean low-income students in urban areas of Milwaukee. It also means rural students. Many rural students may also have high adversity scores if their high schools don't offer the services that one would get at a wealthier institution. So many educators would say what our society needs is, in fact, a broad cross-section of students going to college.
We'll leave it there. Scott, thanks a lot for joining us again today.
Great to be here. Have a good day, everybody.
We've been talking to Scott Jasek. He's an editor for Inside Higher Ed. He joins today to talk about a new adversity index the company behind the SAT will include in its scoring in the future. That'll include information about the high school a student attended, the neighborhood they live in, and the learning conditions and safety conditions in that area. And then colleges can use that to help evaluate the meaning of that SAT score. Still time for you to share your thoughts online. Head over to the Ideas Network Facebook page and you can join the conversation there, or you can tweet us at Central Time WPR.